When someone commits a crime and serves their time, the state or federal court systems is pretty much done with them, but do they leave these people rudderless? In a manner of speaking, does the criminal justice system give a totally fair shake to those who admit to their crimes and fairly, justly do their time? An ex-guest says that the system doesn't always prepare those who want to rebuild their lives with the tools that they need to do that with. He is the director of Reentry Initiative with Right on Crime, who knows firsthand, by the way, of what he speaks about. John Kufos, how are you today, John?
Good morning. Good morning. Good to be with you.
And the website for Right on Crime is, if you're assuming the obvious, rightoncrime.com. But I think we have to start with your personal story, John, because it adds credence to what you have become an advocate for. Talk about your personal situation and what you found during what you went through.
Sure. So I'm from New Jersey originally. I was a defense lawyer there for about a decade with a really bad alcohol problem. And in 2011, I was driving drunk and I hurt someone in an accident. The guy didn't kill them. And I tried to lie my way out of it. And that ended my 20-year battle with alcoholism. Fortunately, the person lived. Nothing I did, advanced that. It's something I'm so sorry for and candidly live with every day. So I go to prison. I get sentenced to 6 years out of Ocean County, which is where I was from. Actually, I started my career in Ocean County, although I had offices across the state, and I went to prison from that same courthouse where I began as a judicial law clerk. Got sentenced to 6 years. I did the crime. I deserved the sentence, and I pulled 17 months off of that before I was paroled. But what I saw was a series of interlocking systems in prison, in the state prison system where I was, that candidly made no sense. I mean, you're talking about things that, people aren't leaving with identification. People are leaving with old and unresolved traffic tickets and old, parking tickets and things like that. When someone's sitting in prison all this time, you figure they would resolve it while you're there. So, I saw inside the state prison system, not a lot was done. And candidly, it's a barrier to workforce development. It's a barrier to people getting their lives back together. It's bad for public safety, and that's really what Right on Crime is about. Is about finding public safety focused solutions. So if you have people who cannot get work, who are trying to get work, or who can't connect to addiction treatment because they don't have an ID card that prison should have gotten them, well then all of the citizens of New Jersey are less safe.
I guess the opposition to what your idea is the criminal justice system responsible for doing any of this? Or is it a matter of, well, if an individual wants to restore themselves after they've made the mistakes that they've made in their lives, is it up to them to explore community organizations, work with the state programs once they are out, and piecemeal whatever they can back together again as fast as they can?
And that's a great question. I do this work nationally, and I'm in, easily a dozen states, doing different projects. And I can tell you that the great response to that question is that we are all consumers of the criminal justice system, right? Some of us went to prison. Some of us are victims. All of us are taxpayers. We're all consumers of this system in one way, shape, or form. So if we all want the same thing, which are safer streets, we want traditionally tax drains to become tax bases, right? We want to make sure that we remove these very simple administrative barriers because they have high returns on investment. Now, in that vein, one of the things that's particularly exciting is in New Jersey, Governor Murphy has done a fantastic job at ensuring he funds reentry and these types of services, both in the Department of Corrections and community-based programs such as, Volunteers of America, down the south part of the state, the New Jersey Reentry Corporation, which is, I was the first executive director of that agency before I left. So the Murphy administration gets it. They've made a real commitment that's going to result in great public safety outcomes, at least for this particular population.
When you think of someone, too, who has fallen down in prison, who, much like yourself, never envisioned himself being in that situation, it's very easy to lose your morals, I guess you could say. And when you were tossed out, and the old axiom in northern New Jersey used to be, you get someone released from prison, you get tossed on the bus, dropped on the green in Morristown with $20 in their pockets. What are they going to do? They'll probably go off and try to steal $100 to find a place to sleep and eat that night. So it's a matter, yeah, it's a matter of, you know, is it crucial? How crucial is it to get ahead of that potential problem that that person who, you know, up to now, by and large, is, okay, we're done with you. There's the door. Good luck with everything.
I mean, it's everything, especially in a public safety context. So, and let's just talk numbers for a second, right? So here's what it costs to get a birth certificate, right? $25. How hard is it to get a Social Security card? Well, any prison can have a memorandum of understanding with the United States Social Security Administration to get Social Security cards for its inmates for free. So it costs zero for the Social Security card. It costs $24 if my number is still correct, going back 2 years from in birth certificate in New Jersey, and it costs $24 for a non-driver ID, and $100 for a restoration fee. So for under $200 per inmate, right, we can now get an inmate who a returning citizen who, number one, can enter addiction treatment if they want, because you can't get anywhere without an ID. Number two, even if there was a job waiting for them without an identification card, and by the way, it's just one barrier, without an identification card, they can't even complete the I-9 like all of us had to complete to get a job. They can go to their local one-stop career center to get job training, and they can stay compliant with their conditions of probation and parole. So it's a very, very low financial investment for a tremendous return, because here's the alternative. And I explained this to a southern state governor who I was with last year before he passed the law to respond to some of this stuff. If you owe $200 to the, you know, Point Pleasant Beach Municipal Court, right, and the prison does nothing to resolve it, and you get released and they give you a court date for 2 weeks from now, you don't go to that court date, the state of New Jersey's already lost more money by the time they encounter you to put you, bring you to the county jail, give you a uniform and give you a tray. You've already lost more than that $200 anyway for that bench warrant, right? So it's a complete black hole of money. And I think the issue here is people don't realize, you know, or government agencies say, well, whose pocket is it coming from? Well, it's all of our taxpayer pockets. And again, you know, New Jersey, I'm very proud of our home state. I'm very proud of Governor Murphy, of the commitment that the governor's made to this, that Governor Murphy's made in funding reentry. Again, I mean, he gets it, right? He understands that to create a hub and spoke model of reentry is going to lead to better public safety outcomes. And I think it's something that New Jersey can be proud of as a, in the upper echelon of national leadership.
So John Kufos, who is the director of Reentry Initiative with Right on Crime, the website is rightoncrime.com, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Now, I know on the outside there have been some advancements. For example, there was a Supreme Court ruling back in January, February, I think it was, Timms versus Indiana, that benefited any offenders who were subject to asset forfeiture for a variety of reasons. And there's also the measure that was approved by Congress, signed by President Trump, the First Step Act. So is this an example where, okay, the prison has their role, but the outside still has their role as well?
Yes, yes. And I'll take the second one first. So I had the privilege of working very closely with the White House and different senators on the First Step Act. I was in the Oval Office when it was signed and had a chance to chat with the president about it. You know, I think the president needs to be commended on his leadership here, as does Jared Kushner, who made sure these coalitions got together. Now, what the First Step Act does of particular importance is it fixes two broad issues. Number one has to do with the prison system, and one has to do with the sentencing system. On the prison side, it's about getting risk assessments at the front end and validated risk assessments. I'll give you an example. I'll give you an analogy. So the way many prisons work today would be as if you walked out of your studio and broke your leg, and you knew you broke your leg, and the only thing that occurred was that you were brought to the ER and sat there until the leg healed improperly, right? There was no X-ray, there was no cast, there's no physical therapy, etc. That's what a prison system looks like in most places right now. So the First Step Act ensures that individualized assessments happen immediately for those folks who are dyslexic, which, by the way, is a tremendous amount of the population nationally. They're going to get treatment thanks to Senator Cassidy's amendments. People are going to be placed in productive activities. So right now, some of the productive activities in the Federal Bureau of Prisons are, you know, like film study, for the joke is basket weaving, but there is sewing and things like that, you know, things that are not actual careers. Productive activities and faith-based activities are going to be brought in. On the sentencing reform side, we have we see that, number one, the crack cocaine disparity. And for your listeners who aren't familiar with that, traditionally, people who were in possession of crack were punished almost 100 times worse than people with powder cocaine. That disparity was brought down during the Obama administration. Now it's brought down even further with retroactive application, so inmates can apply for that, which will do a lot to reduce the racial disparity, I think, in prison. Compassionate release has been expanded, which means if you're dying in prison, particularly if you're on some sort of like hospice care inside of a prison, you're able to be released if you're not a threat and you have certain offenses. And we see something called the safety valve, which gives judges more discretion to sentence appropriately. We know that mandatory minimums simply haven't worked. So the First Step Act is a great catalyst for the rest of the country, especially for states that have been behind on sentencing. Give you an example, Florida. Right now, Florida has one of the harshest sentencing statutes in the country. Whatever you get 85% of whatever number imposed, and there's no parole, and there's no services. There's limited services. With respect to TIMS, that's the asset forfeiture case. So there's a big problem now where people are charged with crimes, and the car they were driving just by virtue of being charged, gets seized. And that could be their grandmother's car or something like that. Asset forfeiture without due process is a huge issue. So it's not specifically a reentry issue, but it's exciting to see in the criminal justice reform context.
It's a multifaceted situation where I think we look at it in a linear idea or view, and it's just got so many elements to it that if you overlook one, it just makes so many other positive potential fall down. And I think what your organization is doing and the points that you bring awareness to make us understand more about what the criminal justice system, their full responsibility is, as well as individual communities, community organizations, state-funded groups, whatever the case may be. It's just a matter of all the pieces have to work together for someone who wants to redeem themselves fully, completely, and restore a life. It's a lot of pieces that have to come together, doesn't it?
Oh, so many pieces. And I like how you said for those that want it, because that's an important piece. Listen, I was locked up with a lot of people who wanted a second chance and to do right. And I was locked up with some people who wouldn't have taken a second chance if you served it up on a silver platter. I mean, we're all human beings, whether you're, in prison or out. There's going to be people that want to partake in a better life and people that do not. Here's what I would say to what I do say around the country and what I've said in the White House. No matter what issue you care about, healthcare, housing, your taxes are too high, there's too much crime on the streets, right? So much of what reentry is addresses every one of those issues. And that's something that we have to understand, because if I use my own situation, if I didn't have access to recovery, to alcohol recovery, right, there's who knows where my life would be right now. If you want families to reunify and build communities, well, a big barrier in many communities is the fact that people can't afford to pay child support. So I think that, for the children who are in these situations with a parent who goes to prison, like we want that traditional father, although it's women as well, but we want the father coming out and working. We want him not committing more crimes. We want him working, and we want him paying his child support. And if he's doing all those things, there's a really good chance that the family has an opportunity to reunify. So, and in addition, the child's life is going to be better, hopefully creating a downstream effect of less recidivism as well. So there's for a small investment, there's great return. And states like New Jersey get it, right? The state understands if we put a few million dollars into this, we're going to save tens of millions of dollars at the back end. I think it's a really smart thing. When I'm around the country, I think anyone from New Jersey, we have to praise our home state, but this time we have something really exciting to praise them about. Governor Christie did a good job of this, and Governor Murphy really, you know, took this to the next level. It's exciting to see. And this, and by the way, this underscores the fact that this is not a right or left issue, right? And this is not a Republican issue. This is not a Democrat issue. This is a people issue, right? And it's more important. Let me go back. Doing what's right is more important than left versus right.
Well, it's more of a responsibility issue. If someone wants to take full responsibility, they should have the be able to have the benefit of the rewards of taking responsibility, and that is a full restoration of what too often is lost, and that's part of the work of Right on Crime, which you can learn more about at rightoncrime.com. We've been joined by their Director of Reentry Initiative, John Kufos. John, thanks for sharing your story, helping us better understand really so many of the missing pieces that are happening. Fortunately, it's right in New Jersey. It needs to be made right elsewhere, and that's what the work of your group is doing. Thanks for doing that, for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me, and thank you to you for amplifying these important issues. Without the media amplifying them, you know, these are complicated issues that sometimes people don't pay attention to. So thank you.